Ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors, Thursday afternoon, that means it's time for In the Garden. We're about to get Master Gardener Ed Bajarski on the phone. He will be able to share some wisdom and, if you're interested, answer your questions about gardening. What do you need to know to make the most of your garden this time of year? Before we dive into the program, we want to say thank you to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite In the Garden. They're located at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, open every day except Wednesday, 10 to 4, with veggie and herb starts, hanging bags and baskets, bedding plants, trees, shrubs, and more. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, and they also offer delivery, 772-3464.
That's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs.
And I do believe we have Ed Bajarski on the phone with us. Are we coming in loud and clear, Ed?
Sounds good to me, Oren.
All right. Glad to have you on the horn here. And, how goes it?
Well, it's going really well. Stuff is sprouting and growing and multiplying, and weeds are thriving, and bugs are increasing, and all of that. So I figured we'd kind of talk about some of our other pests, most of which we've talked about in the past, but very often gardeners kind of need a little reminder to look carefully for some of them and take appropriate measures to hopefully reduce their effects on some of their favorite plants.
Okay, so we want to talk pests. Maybe before we dive into a talk about pests, why don't we pull up a caller? Somebody must have been eager to get a question to you, so we have a caller coming in already here. Why don't we pop that on the horn? Caller on line one, you're on In the Garden. Ed Bajarski is too. What can we do for you?
I'm absolutely on topic. This is Marlene, and something is attacking my garden this year, and the plants come up looking healthy, and then when they get about an inch or an inch and a half, 2 inches tall, they keel over, and you look at them, and there's no root at all.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's interesting. So are these newly planted seedlings or seeds? Germinating and coming up, and then over they go?
I planted from seed, yes.
Okay.
And it's inside a greenhouse with boxes just up a little off the ground.
Aha, okay. Well, that changes things somewhat. I mean, my first suspicion when you mentioned, you know, the plants go over, I mean, and my suspicion is this probably happens overnight. It happens pretty quickly, at least.
Yeah.
My first suspicion was cutworms, but inside the greenhouse, not so likely to be that. And with cutworms...
Well, the boxes are right on the ground.
Okay. Well, maybe then. Anyway, if you look carefully...
I've dug around. I haven't seen any cutworms.
Yeah. You would see, at least for the little plants that are going over, usually you would see that they were chewed off. Which even slugs can do. But the other alternative that's likely, and again, this is a moisture-related issue too, is just damping off fungus, which can result in very quick, indoors, outdoors, well, not outdoors so much as in the greenhouse, in a confined space more so,
mm-hmm.
where plants in pots, if the moisture levels are high, and the fungus is here, that fungus attacks right there at the soil surface. And again, if you're handling the little plants to plant them, if you're not being really, really gentle with them, or if you happen to squeeze the stems, usually when you're transplanting, if you can, try to hold the plant either by the root ball or by the leaves above if they're little tiny ones, because the fungus attacks if there's some injury, and it literally, they fall over overnight, and it's right at ground level. You mentioned there's no roots underneath them, which again, with fungus, that those roots can be rotting off right there below the ground also. So treatment for the future is, again, very carefully handling these. If you can toughen the plants up by actually, before you transplant, by even having a little bit of a fan going across them, that actually toughens up the skin, the stems of the plants. And then even to using some fine sand or fine, if you have chick grit available. I'm not sure, folks have chickens, I assume, in Petersburg, and somebody sells maybe the feed and the grit. Even use some of that around the plant. As soon as you plant it, put some grit there around them, which can help keep the soil surface a little drier around the plant and less likely to have fungus attack the plant itself.
Okay, I plant from seed, so these weren't transplanted at all.
So coming up, okay, so again, coming up though, even adding sand around them, but that's, again, that's where the slugs, the cutworms are a brown caterpillar that are difficult to find, as you mentioned. But again, that damping off is definitely a serious thing that can wipe out a patch of new seedlings very quickly.
The one thing I did different this year was put on lime.
Lime. Well, I mean, assuming that you mix the lime in and not just leave it on the surface,
right,
that shouldn't have made much of an effect unless changing the pH, again, depending on the plants, is normally beneficial. So if you worked in a moderate amount of lime into the soil fairly uniformly, and same thing with fertilizer too, moderate amounts of fertilizer, that even that shouldn't much affect them as long as you're not over-fertilizing to affect it. So it's still somewhat of a mystery. That may not make you feel any better, but I would say plant some, hopefully you've got some more seeds that you can plant some more to try again time. Try to be careful. Just be careful with trying to keep them a little bit on the drier side. Of course, you've got to, they got to come up and they've got to be kept moist enough. If they dry out, they die. So it's a fine balancing act.
Okay, so keep them drier. If it's cutworms, just keep digging around to see if I see any, or what can I do about that?
Right, keep looking, and what I would probably say is go out in the evening, kind of like when you're on, if you're out on slug patrol, go check on the little plants too, and with your flashlight, although I guess that means, 11 o'clock at night, or whenever, or midnight, and hope your neighbors don't call the police over some strangers in the neighborhood out in your garden, but look and see if you can spot some of the little potential little pests, maybe.
Okay.
Does she need to think about if it is damping off, like the fungus issue of damping off, is the soil okay if she adds new sandy or better drainage or something to help dry it, or does she need to consider swapping out soil, or what about it?
Yeah, the soil, the fungus is around us. It's here. So it's difficult, and the spores are floating on the breeze, too. So it would be, you can't really eradicate the fungus from the soil other than maybe making your soil better drained so it doesn't hold too much moisture. If you got too much organic matter, can be an issue there, too. But otherwise, changing the soil just for better drainage would probably be the best suggestion, I think.
Okay. Okay, caller, I hope that more or less gives you some...
Okay, so it's not hopeless at this point?
No, I would say not. Scratch, like I said, as long as you've got some more seeds, and I mean, it isn't like it's too late to plant stuff. I'm only just planted a bed full of beets today and just planted carrots this weekend. I'm not sure what you're working on. More peas are going in the ground, and more of other stuff. So the biggest challenge really right now is probably finding seeds. So if you've got some, plant some more.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. And yes, indeed, that did get us going in the right direction as far as the topic of the day, which is certainly, you know, yeah, pests.
Yeah, and really the big thing is observing your plants, checking them out, whether we're going to be looking for, I mean, slugs, I think we'll probably just pass by slugs. We have slugs. We know we have slugs, and we're out there doing what we can on those. We've talked that one almost to death. But other stuff, it's just about the right time for the currant worm. I had a lady here today asking me about that one. And we've got leaf miners coming, and we've got rip maggots are coming if they haven't already arrived. And so trying to work on some of these things to hopefully minimize their effects, that so for the currant worms, which attack gooseberries first and then red currants and then black currants. So walk by your patch of any of these every day and look for little holes in the leaves. That's the beginning. And the next day the holes are bigger, and the next day the leaves are gone, but for the veins. So that for that one at least, we want to potentially you can look underneath the leaves for the eggs, which are laid in clusters by a little, it's actually a sawfly, it's not actually a moth on these. So they're not technically caterpillars, they're larvae. Minor distinction, I guess. But if we, as soon as we see them, we should work at getting out our soap spray, you know, 1 to 2 tablespoons of liquid soap, a quart of water, and spray down the leaves, you know, and particularly try to get to the undersides of the leaves. You see caterpillars, spray the caterpillars, because it needs to contact the caterpillars. Now, you can add a little bit of cayenne pepper spray or why am I blanking out on this? Hot salsa. Anyway, to spice it up a little bit. But again, generally this has to be contact the insects, the caterpillars themselves, the larvae, to kill them. And you may have to do this like every 2 or 3 days once they get started working on chewing that stuff. Then the other thing is, nowadays, it used to be we only got one brood, one batch of them per season. Now we are starting to get another batch of them later on, like in late July to August, and they do it again. So we've really got to be diligent. You know, climate is changing, and that has affected that. Another one, kind of the same thing happening, is the cabbage root maggots. They are one that, again, normally you'd get one batch when the soil and the air temperature gets to the right, we get the right amount of degree days of warmth. They emerge. The little flies go looking for another cabbage or radish or broccoli or cauliflower, turnips, any of those. They lay their eggs right at the base of the plant, and then the little larvae burrow down to chew on the roots. So, and that one, we for that one to prevent, we want to usually use a barrier. And the horticultural fabric, Rime is the, or Agribon are two of the brand names, really stop that, because it's such fine mesh fabric. Little flies can't get through it, so you've got to hold it down all the way around the edges with bricks or sticks or something like that, or even bury the edges in soil. Pretty much as soon as you plant these plants, that's what I do. I get my little cabbages and cauliflower in the ground, covered up with Rime, and trying to keep those critters from getting to it. And the difficulty, to some extent, is that you can get weeds growing underneath there just fine. Of course, then you want to get under and try to remove the weeds in the hopes that you don't keep it open long enough that the little flies sneak in, given the opportunity, and attack or lay their eggs again. So that's a challenge. So, but again, putting it on immediately, I can see it. I'm outside. I can see it kind of billowing in the breeze. It's very lightweight material. You can put it on directly over the top of the plants, and normally it comes in a 5 or 6 foot wide, and I use that width to cover a 4 foot wide box. So the plants will grow up, lift it up as they get bigger. and water flows through, the rain goes through, light goes through, and so it can, I leave it on there. One lady was asking how long today, former Petersburg resident even, was asking how long do I leave it on? Well, I leave it on as long as I can, till harvest if possible, or whenever the plants are, get so large that they're lifting it up from the edges, and by that time they should have a big root system to be safe, to that they could tolerate it if the flies came along. It's particularly later on in the season, like we mentioned, for that second batch.
And for those listening and thinking about applying this sort of preventative barrier strategy in their own gardens, what's a little roll call of the family of plants that these particular root maggots are looking for?
Yes. So all of those in the cabbage family, you know, from radishes, turnips, rutabagas, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, kohlrabi, all of those are affected by that one root maggot. So you'd want to cover those up to protect them. But then we also, I don't know if you have them in Petersburg or not. We definitely have it in Juneau. There is an onion root maggot also. And so it doesn't affect, hardly ever, occasionally I get one or two bulbs of garlic that are affected, but rarely. But leeks and regular onions, green onions, and shallots are definitely affected. So same thing, I've got my shallots are protected, and I just planted a bunch of leeks and little shallot seedlings. So those are also protected by this same fabric. Those, as far as I know, are the only two families, the onion family and the cabbage family, that are affected by root maggots here. There are more, but we don't have them in Southeast Alaska yet.
That's a good tip.
So, other than some other pests, another one we get somewhat is the, we get leaf miners, which attack, there's different species of insects which attack different families. So there's one that affects spinach and beets. And and still a different one that will affect, it's the most common one, I think, will attack the lilac leaf miner. And that one is quite common, and you'll see brown patches on the leaves. Actually, even before that, sometimes if you catch them early, it almost looks like a window in the leaf where the little fly lays its eggs on the leaf. The little larvae burrows in and eats out the layer in between the top and the bottom surface of the leaf, literally making, well, they call them mines, because some of them make little curving trails in there, and others, they look almost more like blisters. So, like I said, like a window, you can, and if you hold the leaf up to the light, you can actually see the outline of the little maggots inside the leaf, and you can squish those. But if you've got a lot of them, it's some, you know, if you've got a big lilac tree bush, that's a lot of squishing by hand. And that's pretty much the only option, other than once you have them, at least. Prevention is mostly cleanup. Cleaning up, scratching up, actually cleaning up the surface of the soil when the leaves fall in late summer, fall, and or even in the springtime, going underneath these plants that you know have had this problem in the past. And this applies also really pretty well to the currants and the gooseberries, is actually raking, loosening up the soil underneath that those plants, even while we're still getting freezing thawing action, to kill off the pupas are in the soil waiting until, again, things warm up enough for them to emerge. And also potentially getting the little birds that are migrating through, little sparrows and other things that scratch around underneath, that might eat those also. So cleanup work is really good to do. And again, the other option, if you can get enough of it, would be literally in the fall after leaf fall, is put a barrier of adding sand, like a half inch or an inch of sand underneath the plants, or even a barrier, a thick barrier of, you know, 3 to 4 inches or more of seaweed. You're trying to prevent the little critters from emerging from the soil, basically, the following spring.
Uh-huh. Nice. Okay. So if you're in the midst of the, you know, an outbreak of those leaf miners, there's not much you can do except go after the bugs sort of one by one, I suppose, at the moment. But then...
Exactly.
Come fall, though, it sounds like there's some nice strategies that might not be immediately obvious. Like, I hadn't exactly thought of raking and kind of turning, disturbing that soil to expose the eggs and the critters who are trying to go a little dormant and hang out, let them get eaten by birds or frozen, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, to some extent, you can kind of do that with slug eggs, too. But those, they're better. They seem like they know better, and they hide out better, would be my suggestion on that. So, yeah, doing the cleanup work really does help. And even to, you can try certainly picking off the leaves that you see are affected when you first see them and bag them, put them into, you know, into garbage bags and seal the bags. You don't, it's not something you want to throw into your compost because they'll just be happy as could be if they're given that opportunity to hang out in kind of a warmer place for the winter time. So you want to remove them. But again, if you've got a bad infestation, you may end up stripping most of your leaves off a lilac tree, which is detrimental to the lilac, logically.
Right.
Wow. So yeah, the squishing them can help reduce the numbers, that and the cleanup.
Gotcha. Okay, that's a good one to think about, absolutely.
So then something else that another one of my questions, it's kind of pest related, is I'm sitting on some logs here in my log beds around some primroses, and folks were asking me several different ones today about mosses and lichens on trees, whether that is harmful to the trees or shrub. And the answer is not usually, maybe, perhaps. How's that? For waffling. If you can easily go out there and you can rub it off, scratch it off. If you get big pads or patches of moss, like in the crotches of trees or just growing out on the trees, it can hold extra moisture on the tree, which can potentially lead to some fungus issues that might go into the trees. So you can go after some of that with just a hand, like a plastic or nylon bristled scrub brush, and gently scrub off what you can reach. You know, if you can pick off, hopefully you don't have that much. Because you look around, look up at the spruces and the hemlock trees, and there's the old man's beard and other stuff, which is normal native stuff. And of course, even we have our, whether it be apple trees or cherry trees or otherwise, and it's just new habitat for that, those mosses and fungi and lichens that may grow on them. So potentially also you can have insects living in that moss who might or might not want to attack the trees too. I don't have any recommendations for a spray that you would, you know, spray on the tree to kill off the moss. So it is somewhat aesthetic, but is also, at least for the trees, if you can reach the stuff, you know, removing what you can would be beneficial. So the trunks of the trees can dry out in the sun as I'm sitting here kind of scraping it off here and there.
Nice. So the reason to kind of mitigate moss and whatnot on trees isn't so much that the moss is especially harmful, but it's that the moisture held onto the tree by the moss and the potential habitat for possibly harmful pests and insects.
It kind of goes along with the earlier parts about the damping off fungus and keeping soil surface more dry.
Right.
You know, fungus is everywhere around us. It wants to grow in, on, and all over the place. And if surfaces stay moist, then it is more likely to grow. So whatever we can do, again, like in our greenhouses, again, keeping air moving, keeping our moisture levels a little lower so we don't get fungus to grow in the greenhouses, that's certainly beneficial. And maybe that kind of leads us right into things like outdoors and indoors is aphids, which, again, as they are just starting, you know, the things are warming up in the greenhouses. They tend to warm up sooner, and the aphids come out sooner. And that's another one where we can use yellow sticky traps to catch the aphids, the flying aphids, which can move from plant to plant. Otherwise, we can also carefully use soap spray to spray the plants that are infested with aphids, too, to try to minimize that. And there are, for those at least, particularly in greenhouse situations, there are some predatory insects which can be purchased from various online sellers. If you look for aphid predators, you'll get various names and varieties that will come up, including, and I'm sure you've seen and heard about, using ladybugs. And again, ladybugs inside a greenhouse may work better if you've got much of an infestation. If you've got enough to keep the ladybugs alive, then they'll stick around too. But there are other predators that are even better than ladybugs that, you know, you do some research on those for potential greenhouse release. Mm-hmm. Outdoors, not so useful just because they can spread out too much and may not get the amount of plant, the control that you want.
And you're saying aphids are a little bit like fungus spores. They're just sort of, they exist. They're kind of hard to avoid.
It is. There are lots and lots of different kinds of aphids. I mean, I'm sitting underneath an alder tree. A little later on in the summer, we will see or feel. I mean, they, you know, a lot of times we'll see them land on us, fall out of the alder trees. And we've got a couple. There's some woolly aphids, and then there's just some little green aphids that are on the alders. There's aphids, there's the woolly aphids on buttercups, which you think, oh, good, well, they're eating the buttercups. I don't know, probably not making much of a dent. But things like tomatoes and peppers are an aphid magnet in a greenhouse. And eggplant are another one that just the aphids love. Tomatoes, a little bit. Cucumbers, I've had an issue with them in the greenhouse, and other plants. So, again, it's watching, looking at your plants and seeing changes, whether you're getting yellow wing leaves for aphids, or you're getting little spots, you see speckles on them, or, boy, it brings up still another one. The spittle bugs are still another one, which, just like aphids, they do suck the juices of plants. Spittle bugs are more obvious, you know, and they're another one of those that you can, you know, squish. There, at least in a greenhouse, you've got a chance to control them by hand squishing the spittle bugs. So that's another option. But again, observing your plants, looking at the top of the leaves, the bottom of the leaves, are things chewing on the leaves, all of that may help you at least try to kill off what you can see or catch up with.
So maybe we want to leave people with just a nice little soap spray recipe and encouragement to go take a close look and make sure that things aren't going to, you know, your hard work isn't being feasted on by little flying monsters.
Right, yeah, I mean, we talk about the four-legged pests and the six-legged pests, and then they get up to other different kinds. I'll throw one more out there because you folks probably have seen them down there. We certainly are recently seeing them here, too, again. On rhododendrons particularly, there's the rhododendron root weevil, which also the adults chew on the edges of the rhododendron leaves, leaving what looks like notches in the edges of the leaves. And it's a gray, very hard little critter. I mean, it's a hard one to crunch between your fingers. Trust me on this. And control for that one, if you can keep the adults out of the rhododendrons, you want to prune up the leafy branches so they don't touch the ground. Put some tape around the trunks of the rhododendrons near, right close to the ground. And you can buy something called Tangle Foot or Tangle Trap, the real sticky, gooey stuff. You can spread on the tape, and this can be duct tape. It can be a couple layers of masking tape, frog tape, some of the others. Or you can even use Vaseline, which is more easily available, and you smear it around on the tape, you know, so it's, and then the because these little weevils do not fly. They walk, crawl up the stems and out to the leaves. So again, it's a barrier and a trap. So you're trying to catch these little critters too. And this is the time they're active.
Hmm. Is that just on rhododendrons?
It's pretty, well, no, it isn't. There's rhododendrons, and it's actually on strawberries. You might see notches. It's pretty tough to control them there like that. And there are certain species of primulas also that are all affected by the same critter and show the same signs, these little notches in the leaves. But for those other ones, it's much more difficult to try to remove. So, again, do what you can on the rhododendrons. The primulas, it may be somewhat disfiguring of leaves, and the strawberries, you may see a little bit of damage, usually not too much. But it's the rhododendrons are more affected and look unaesthetically appealing.
If you have some of those little weevils or whatever, like up in the leaves, is there anything you can do at that point? They don't, like, go up and down.
Well, yeah, they do. You know, they really do. I mean, yeah, daily or nightly, I should say.
Oh,
but
nice.
One of the other things, and this applies if you can, so you've got your rhododendrons out there, and you've hopefully done your clipping so you can get in underneath them. Again, the scratching and loosening up underneath and doing cleanup work is valuable, too, in the fall. But also, if you say you've got an old sheet or old blankets, even sheets of plastic will work. Put this underneath the rhododendron bush, and as you know, up, try to leave a little space at the trunk if you don't have the gooey covered tape. And then go out there in the evening or at night and shake the plant off, and then hopefully you shake the little weevils off onto the fabric, and you can then try to crush them in the fabric. And you can do the same thing for the currant worms. But that at least is daytime activity. And that's their defense mechanism, is to just drop off into the soil to disappear. Well, if you shake them off onto a sheet, and then you pull your sheet out there onto the driveway, fold it over, and then do the little bug killing dance to whatever tune you happen to favor.
Yeah. Wow, that's quite an image, but could save your rhododendron.
So, yeah, some of these are fairly simple things. I mean, if you ever find one of these weevils, and they aren't real common. Well, they're common enough on the rhododendron. But, yeah, you feel one, you grab one, and look at them closely. Look at them under the magnifying glass. They're quite fascinating with this little curved snout. Or you do the internet research, look up rhododendron root weevil, and you'll get a picture of them. But they are a really hard, crunchy critter.
Oh. Gosh. That's nice. That is a great tip, though, that get them while they're commuting.
Yes. Yep. Prevent them, yes. Prevent them from getting up, just like we're trying to prevent the root maggots from getting to our cabbage family plants. So prevention, barriers, whatever it is that takes, so we're not using, you know, really harmful pesticides.
Right. Nice. Okay. Distance, mitigation, prevention. Makes sense. These are good things to think about as things get a little warmer and the gardens are starting to be sort of irresistible to, you know, competition. It's good to have strategies and know what to look for. So these are great tips today, Ed. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, let's leave it there and we'll pick up the conversation again next week. Until then, looks like a pretty nice gardening forecast for the weekend, so hopefully folks enjoy, get a lot of exercise, do the stretches, take breaks if you're going hard. But yeah, enjoy watching your plants grow.
Right.
Okay, thank you again, Ed.
Yep, bye, Aaron.
Well, here we go. And that is In the Garden. Master Gardener Ed Bajarski equipping us for the battle against pests all season long as they start to come after our children in the garden, these little plants that you put so much effort into cultivating, and then, oh, they just grow up so fast. Anyway, thank you to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They're out at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, every day but Wednesday, 10 to 4. That's their hours. They welcome visitors and also offer delivery. 772-3464, the phone number for the Flower Farm. Trees, shrubs, bedding plants, starts, baskets. That's the Flower Farm. Stay tuned. We'll have an episode of the Tongass Journal coming up next, and then we'll have high country music. Your DJ this afternoon is Chris Ford.
You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes?